I'm prepared to do anything I can
well,
to
play it then.
Country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Coming up this hour, we'll be talking to football commentator Rob Daly about very much a surprise package perhaps this season, but a team absolutely dominating the Bundesliga, and about the great feeling that is actually taking place in Dortmund at the moment under a very astute coach. We were going to have an 11 sports chat with Kieran Cunningham. I suppose to paraphrase that Simpsons episode, the new and improved 11 sports chat has been cancelled because we had a bit of a meltdown here with our computer. So that's not going to happen, but instead of that, you have a bit of a treat. Graeme Souness, we spoke to John Giles earlier about his feisty appearances with Suey, not only in studio but also on the football pitch. And earlier on today, on the Keith Andrews show, Graeme Souness spoke to him, and he started off by talking about Pep Guardiola.
When you're winning, everyone's a nice guy. You know, you start off, and this is how it works, you start off in management, and you want to be everyone's friend, and you're an open book. And then the walls, you lose a few games, and the walls start to close in, you start to be suspicious of people, you fall out with people, and eventually you've just got your small circle that's around you, and the rest are ones to be wary of. And I don't think that's ever changed.
That happened to you on a couple of occasions?
Oh, every game, every job. Yeah, you start off wanting to be helpful to people, and then you might feel you've been let down by generally parts of the media, and then people close to you that you thought, you know, they're 100% with me. Mm. I used to say to players very early on when I took a job, I will find out about you, and you will only find out about me when we lose two or three games back to back. But if we're winning games, we're all winners. We're a strong dressing room. We're all big characters. Mm. But you only find out about people in football terms and defeat. You know how they deal with that. Mm. They start to point fingers, or they look at themselves first.
With the current Liverpool team, two players that have made a big difference have been Alisson and Van Dijk. Mm. I actually asked you this in the last couple of weeks, the best centre half you've played with. Alan Hansen, am I right?
I think this guy, Van Dijk, has got everything Alan Hansen had. Well, they were both sensational. He is sensational centre. Where Van Dijk is majestic, he's far better than Alan Hansen in the air. I think Al would have better passing range. Maybe not. But you've got to remember what the pitches Alan Hansen was trying to thread balls through on were very different to the ones today.
Fair comparisons in terms of quality of them.
Yeah. You know, Alan Hansen looked like he jumped out of Marks and Spencer's window after we played in January on a muddy pitch. He never went to ground. We were talking about Phil Jones last night, going to ground too much.
Constantly.
Alan Hansen, we had a great part. Mark Lawrence and Alan Hansen. After 10 minutes on a muddy pitch in January, Loro was covered in mud. And I think he was a fabulous player as well.
Yeah, I know you liked him.
He was an aggressive boy, and you know, you'd want him in the trenches with you. He could read it, but I think he just enjoyed smashing a few people.
Aggressive side of it.
Yeah, I think he enjoyed that. And then you had Alan Hansen after 90 minutes in a January muddy pitch, like a jump out of a shop window. Only because he just read everything. Mm. You know, you'd get there early and just poke it away, or get there early and take it off their toes and make a pass.
How big of a difference does it make? We've mentioned Van Dijk on in. There's a little bit of criticism. So behind you, you're playing the helmet. Massive difference. And then again, Alisson behind it.
Well, you think, I mean, Liverpool were very good last year, but give daft goals away. Mm. Look at the final of Champions League.
And scored 2-3 goals.
So they don't, if they get to the final this year, and you know, a Champions League final, arguably the biggest game you can play in at club level, and yet it's nip and tuck, you're bossing the game for 10 minutes, the opposition are bossing it, and that's like that for the first half, you're very much in the game. No one's making a rick. But then look what happened to Liverpool last year. The goalkeeper
had one.
Right away, you're like that. Pfft, not again. Mm. And that spreads through the team. I go back to my last year at Liverpool, 84. We won the treble. Rushy was winning us games 1-0, 2-1, 2-0. We were a really tight outfit to play against.
So one year you conceded about 14, 15 goals?
That was, I think that was, yeah. That was with Clement goal. That was early 80s. That was at 80 or 81. But, you know, if you've got to be tight, and Liverpool now can win games. Liverpool can steal against Napoli for me on Tuesday night, if it had been last year.
A lot of them gave them a good chance to equalise when he came on.
See, it doesn't matter how good you are, how much of the ball you have, your goalkeeper will have to make a save somewhere in the 90 minutes or save somewhere in 90 minutes. No matter how much you're on the front foot, how much you're bossing the game, you must have a good goalkeeper. You will not win any big trophies without a proper goalkeeper.
Yeah, more De Gea.
I think I've got to go for De Gea because he's done it. What is it?
Consistent.
For his last 4 out of 5 years, he's won the Sir Matt Busby Trophy. He's the player, their player of the year. Mm. I mean, he's been fabulous, hasn't he? He does things like the great Pat Jennings used to do, where he'd save it with his... You can't remember Pat Jennings, what a goalkeeper he was. He used to save things with his knees and his legs, you know, his shins, his feet.
Orthodox.
But technically a great goalkeeper as well. I mean, De Gea is top class. And I know he had a difficult World Cup, but he is top class. Yeah.
The midfield position has changed, as we know. Even when I was coming through, it was very much a 4-4-2. You had to do everything that a midfielder was expected to do. Whereas now they're pigeonholed into Haaland. I know it's a bugbear. It's even a bugbear of mine. So, you know, I don't think it's showing your age. I totally agree with you about it.
Keith, the game's never changed. Right, the modern game, and we're guilty of it, we rattle off these stats. The modern midfield player today, his stats would suggest that, you know, he never gives the ball away. But he's passed the ball 10 yards square in his own half when another team have retreated into their half. You know, again, I come back to, I can only talk about Liverpool. That's where the biggest part of my education came. The most common thing you would have heard on the training ground when we're playing small-sided games would have been from Ronnie Moran saying, look forward, that's cheap, going sideways, I could play that ball, look forward. Now, the modern player today, I love it when he gets the ball, they're in possession, in their own half, deep in their own half, and he goes into the back four or back three and takes a 10-yard pass off his centre half, when the team have retreated into their half, and he passes it out to the left, another 10-yard pass. What's that?
Yeah.
But my stats tell you I never give the ball away. A few years ago, who completed, I've gone back 6 years ago, who had the best stats for accuracy of passing in the Premier League? About 6 years ago.
Was he a midfielder?
No. You never got. It was Mertesacker at Arsenal.
Right.
10 yards that way, 5 yards that way, 10 yards that way.
What I would say though about your standards for a midfielder are so high. So when you say that, they are. They obviously are because of the level you play at. So when I look at Liverpool's midfield and I see Henderson dropping into a pocket of space, and I've said this to you before, he's not good enough to have it in a tight, congested area. That's why he has to give himself a little bit. I said it about Fellaini last night. Should have made the angle a bit more, because you could have it in a phone box and hold someone off and then play it, and the top players can. But
midfield, an ideal where midfielders should be getting the ball between the striker they're playing against and the midfielder they're playing against. Not
the other way around.
In front of the 11 players they're playing against.
Yeah.
Because think of this. Say I'm playing with a back four, right? I'm playing in the Liverpool team. We've got a back four. So Robertson's gone, and Alexander's gone that side. And I go back into the back four, and I take a pass of Joe Gomez.
Yeah.
So I'm now square with Joe Gomez and Van Dijk, and Henderson, Robertson slightly in advance of me, and Trent slightly in advance of me.
Yeah.
And my goalkeeper's behind me as well. So I now get the ball, I turn, I'm a midfield player for Liverpool, and I turn, and the 11 players I'm playing against have all dropped into their half. So I've now got my back four, my goalkeeper and me, that's six players. So that means I've got five players I'm having to find amongst 11 of theirs.
Yeah.
Double difficult. So that's, maybe Liverpool are the wrong one to talk about in that respect, because they're such a fabulous team right now. But the modern players, they drop in and get the ball and look as if they're getting lots of touches, but they're doing nothing with it.
Goes back to the way they're getting taught the game though, doesn't it?
Yeah. I come back to Ronnie Moran. Look forward. Get it in there. Your first look, get the ball, look forward. You know, the last position you want, in a poor team today, the last place you want to play is a centre forward. I've got sympathy with Lukaku.
Because they never taught you?
You know, because you've got to look at the midfield. You know, a centre forward wants the ball quick, and he wants it accurately.
Mm.
He wants to see a midfield player get it out of his feet and hit him right away. He doesn't want the ball played into him, touch, 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 and then attempt to pass. because the opportunity for him to get free and get a shot at goal is gone.
Mm. So staying on that midfield position then, if you were, where would you play if it was a midfield three? Graham Souness, would you be the six, the holder?
Yeah.
In today's game?
Yeah, you see, we talk about the modern game. My position would be no different. I'd be a holding midfield player. If you listen to the people talk about the modern game, attacking fullbacks are a new thing. Well, I played in three European Cup finals, and Alan Kennedy scored in one in open play, and Phil Neal scored in another one in open play. So what people could never work out when they played against Liverpool is that we always had extra men in midfield, and we had our two fullbacks. When I got the ball, as we were talking about, our two fullbacks were in front of me. They're always in front of me.
Yeah.
So people couldn't work out why we kept the ball so well, and why we had more of the ball than whoever we played against generally.
Well, but if they went, wingers rolled in?
Yeah, and then the wider men, Jimmy Case, Sammy would be pushed on, or Ray Kennedy would be pushed on another side, or Ronnie, when he first got in the team, would be pushed on. We always had more bodies in there, and we kept the ball better. We knew the game hasn't really changed.
Trying to reinvent the wheel?
But it was something. I love the terminology. Yeah, Bob Paisley would, I can remember him saying, yeah, what's that leading the line mean? And there was a blindside run, and he had to chuckle. So, you know, that terminology was sneaking into the game when he was managing. And what he'd make of the gobbledygook today with technical cages and high presses and low presses and... Oh, don't get me started.
But they do need more instructions now. So your era, the players they brought, and you were getting it from the side and work it out all along. Now, they can't work it out. I think the top players can, because it's not an issue for them, because they're
That's
on a different
100%
level.
Correct.
But the vast majority of even Premier League players, you mentioned Eddie Howe, I think his players need massive detail. And the reason they are so effective is because of him.
I look back at my career when I was managing stroke coaching. I made a very obvious mistake. I never went on a coaching course. And I, like most players who played at a decent level, if you go into coaching, why is he not getting it? Why am I having to tell him all the time? And you get frustrated by that. And then I went on a coaching course when I was finished with it. I thought, I'll go on this coaching, see if, you know, if I'm... Missing and I went on it, and the only thing I took away from a coaching course was, I say the only thing, vital thing, what we're talking about, revisit. What that basically means is tell them every day if you have to, twice a day if you have to, 10 times a day if you have to. But, you know, I come back to the very first story we told at Liverpool, work it out for yourself, son. You think that players can do that, but a lot of players, unfortunately, can't.
If you had to play in a three-man midfield... currently in the Premier League, what two would you like in there with you?
Oh,
I think I know one.
I'd have De Bruyne.
Oh, would you?
Yeah.
So would you be the sitter in two, or would you have...
I would sit De Bruyne on my left-hand side. Oh, I just don't play. I mean, what are we classing Hazard as a midfield player? No. Silva, David Silva.
There you go from him.
I mean, yeah, the boys, you just...
Get on with it.
Yeah. Special players, and that's where's maybe just an opening for Liverpool right now. Both of them are injured.
Both of them. What do you think, Sunday and Liverpool United?
Well, on
current form, obviously points to Liverpool.
Going back to when I was playing, I hate saying that, but I can't think of any. You know, when I'm on the telly, when I was a player, I know people go, oh, but I can only make this comparison that when I played, we were the better team, and United weren't. You know. Weren't anywhere near us. Maybe that's wrong, but they weren't winning things. Still had top players, but they weren't winning things. And we never ever had an easy game against them. They would push us all the way.
Because of the rivalry.
Because of the historical rivalry. And I expect the same. Liverpool, you got a fancy at home, playing really well.
A few defensive issues as well, though, haven't they, Liverpool? Matip out now as well. Obviously, Gomez out, Alexander-Arnold. So
they'll have to play Lovren then?
Probably.
But I think you're fancying Liverpool if you're sitting here. Doesn't matter. See, United are, just briefly, and we touched on that last night. Jose doesn't know his best 11. 2.5 years into the job.
It's not alarming, though, considering he's either signed a lot of them, decided to keep them, given them new contracts.
Yeah, if you're a United supporter, you know, you want continuity. You want to, as a manager, normally a couple of years in, you've got six or seven that are core. Yeah. I don't think United have that. I don't think United have that. I mean, who's the one consistent? The goalkeeper. I mean, back four, chops and changes, searching for something. Midfield, chops and changes, searching for up front, the exact same. So that's not a great place to be. You want to be in a settled situation where they're forming relationships and sort of understandings. But right now, Man United don't have that. They've not had that for a couple of years now. They don't know what the best starting 11 is and what the best system is even. And that's a worry. In Liverpool, the opposite. You know, they're going into it knowing the system they play. There'll be seven or eight that know they're definitely going to play. And that's an enormous advantage. When you look at that Liverpool team, I think the goalkeeper's 25, 26. I think Van Dijk's 26 or 27.
Yeah.
And then the rest are just boys.
Boys, yeah.
They could, barring injury, and if Van Dijk stays, decade together, 10 years together, what a position they're in.
Especially with that front three.
Well, it's a bit like Wenger getting an Arsenal job, the best back five in Europe at the time. Dixon, Winterburn, was it Adams and Bold?
Winterburn, yeah.
And Seaman, the best back five. And on that's the foundation then. And Liverpool right now are looking like the real deal, I think.
You surprised they've kept pace with Man City?
No. People were saying because Salah wasn't getting his goals. He got 44 goals last year. I don't see him getting 44 again this year, but I think he'll get in his 30s. And that's still a phenomenal season.
Said he needs to produce it, don't you, for a few years before he's...
Yeah, I feel, you know, when you're talking about Dalglish or Rush. Yeah, you got to be doing it for a decade, haven't you? Where could Liverpool go? You know, you're always... I think it's my team, if you like. You think, what could go wrong? I mean, I'm surprised Van Dijk ended up at Liverpool, because I think when they didn't get him first time round,
ship had sailed.
I'm thinking Barcelona are alerted, PSG. Real Madrid, any of the really big guys, because he would walk into all their teams. But he's a Liverpool supporter, so he might be happy to stay there for the next 8 to 10 years, which would be great news, because you know what? You know, he is a rock. He's a proper one. They'd sniff around him, possibly. And if Salah gets another 30-odd goals this year, sniff around him. But if they can keep that group together, I think they're destined to win things.
First things first, how good does Graeme Souness look there? I mean, obviously a lot of you are, shall we say, watching on the radio, but Graeme Souness is 65 years of age, he's pension age, and the man looks, he could probably pass for early 50s. I have to say he looks a lot healthier than some of the characters in the Off the Ball office today, including yours truly. You can watch that whole episode, by the way, on the Keith Andrews Show on youtube.com/offtheball, and it's back on all our social channels at 12:30 PM next Thursday. Now, the dead rubber, which Richie and I couldn't come to any conclusion about, principally because I didn't give Richie time to Google it. One text, a rubber bounces. When the rubber is dead, there is no bounce. It stays where it is, hence no change. However, a few people have gotten in and they say that the phrase is derived from the card game Bridge, which conjures up images of kind of my, older people in the family having a game of cards over a few drinks in the local pub. Hopefully, this is actually correct and it'll put the issue to bed, because Margaret in Cork says, she's been in touch, the dead rubber relates to the card game of Bridge. A rubber was one of three rounds of, so if two are already won, when the third doesn't matter, that would make a lot of sense, because it's like kind of the last game of the group that essentially is, what do they call it, a dead rubber? In any event, we'll probably be happy that that's clarified now. We're going to go to the break now, but before that, rather after that, football commentator Rob Daly, he's going to be in to talk to us about what I think is a very heartwarming story from Germany about Borussia Dortmund, essentially what remains a working class club, charging fans prices that they can actually afford, and top of the table in the Bundesliga, no less.
Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Boyle Sports. Now with same-day withdrawals to your Visa debit card.
The Pat Kenny Show.
It's like a football manager who buys a player for 50 million euros, subject to a medical, and in the medical you discover that he's got a dodgy knee. Do you still pay the 50 million? We are going ahead with this, even though we know that it's going to make us poorer, going to make the country weaker. We know the lies that were told. We know the crimes that were committed. I think, with all that knowledge, people are entitled to be asked, do you still want to go ahead with this?
The Pat Kenny Show.
With MasterCard.
Back tomorrow at 9 a.m.
on News Talk.
There's just 12 more sleeps till Santa. But don't panic. You've still got time to find that perfect Christmas gift with all Harvey Norman stores open until 10 p.m. tonight. With the best Christmas gift ideas and deals on tablets, big screen TVs, laptops, headphones, cameras, hairstylers, coffee machines, drones, phones, homewares and much, much more. Plus, there'll be free mince pies and hot chocolate in-store all day. Harvey Norman. All stores open until 10 p.m. tonight.
Christmas is sorted at Tower Records with the best albums of 2018 from Lisa O'Neill, Villagers, Christine and the Queens, Gavin James, Damien Dempsey, plus loads more on CD and LP. Also, all the best TV and film releases on DVD and Blu-ray. Tower Records, open 7 days a week, Dawson Street and O'Connell Street, or visit towerrecords.ie. Tower Records. No music, no life.
Make it festive at Woody's this Christmas. Get a cracking 70% off all crackers and baubles. Deck the halls with up to 70% off Christmas decorations and all LED light sets half price. Woody's, we're all homemakers. T's and C's apply.
There are more people experiencing homelessness in Ireland now than ever before. There is one way you can help this Christmas. Support Peter McVerry Trust to refurbish, renovate or repair 100 homes. Support Peter McVerry Trust to help 100 people and families leave homelessness behind permanently. Visit pmvtrust.ie/100homes or call 01-823-0776 and help more people home this Christmas. Thank you.
It's not you, it's me. Actually, it is you. When we first met, you were all I wanted, but now you're just too limiting. I want to express myself, do things I've never done, be creative. I just need more from a phone.
Looking for the new love of your life? The Samsung Note 9 comes with the new Bluetooth-enabled S Pen, allowing you to scribble notes and take pictures remotely. And until December 24th, we're offering up to €165 cashback on a range of Samsung tech, including tablets, phones and wearables. Available from select retailers. Terms and conditions apply.
Discover all new design, all new technology and an all new level of performance. The all-new BMW 3 Series, arriving March 2019. Rediscover every hairpin turn and rugged road with Adaptive M Suspension. Or enjoy unprecedented control and entertainment on Irish motorways with the all-new Advanced Intelligent Assistant. Reserve your all-new BMW 3 Series now at discoverbmw.ie.
There's just 12 more sleeps till Santa. But don't panic. You've still got time to find that perfect Christmas gift with all Harvey Norman stores open until 10 p.m. tonight. With the best Christmas gift ideas and deals on tablets, big screen TVs, laptops, headphones, cameras, hairstylers, coffee machines, drones, phones, homewares and much, much more. Plus, there'll be free mince pies and hot chocolate in-store all day. Harvey Norman. All stores open until 10 p.m. tonight.
Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
We're now joined by footy commentator Rob Daly, who is on the line to discuss the phenomenal success, really, of Borussia Dortmund this season, which is a pretty heartwarming story, I think, in the general football landscape. How are you, Rob?
Not too bad. How are you?
All good, all good. I was actually in Anfield the other night watching Liverpool, and I'm reading today that this Liverpool-Borussia Dortmund clash, which could happen, is something that Dortmund's kind of people are hoping to avoid, you know, return of Jurgen Klopp. But Dortmund, unlike Liverpool, topped their group. But it's been an incredible season for them.
Yeah, it's been a year, of sorting out a lot of the problems of the last 2 years, really. They've found their playing mojo again. There is a style of football that's expected of Borussia Dortmund, mainly set by the pressing high-tempo football of Jurgen Klopp. And they've brought that back with Lucien Favre, who's the head coach now. He used to be the boss of Borussia Mönchengladbach, left Nice in France in the summer to take over at Dortmund. And he's famous for demanding a lot of his players, but also for getting a very good, attractive brand of football out of them. And, you know, he's left out some key players from previous years to find a way of playing that suits them. And it's got them through in the Champions League, and it's got them top of the Bundesliga. And the improvement has been much quicker than anyone would have expected.
Obviously, this season, Bayern aren't maybe the force that they were. Obviously, I guess players are aging. But if we can go back to the start of the season, what was the general expectation? He comes in, you know, you're expecting maybe they might improve. But what was the expectation about Dortmund?
I think to be much closer to Bayern, I think Dortmund finished fourth last season, but they were something between 20 and 30 points off Bayern. So nowhere near them, not competing for the title as they have been under Klopp and to an extent under Thomas Tuchel, who's now at PSG. So I think it was just to be relatively competitive again. No one expected Bayern to be this poor. I did personally think that the appointment of Niko Kovac as their head coach was a mistake, the wrong kind of coach for Bayern, but that's another story. But Lucien Favre has galvanised the squad very quickly, and one of the reasons they've succeeded this season has been because of an 18-year-old English guy who left Manchester City, took a risk, and is now one of their star players in Jadon Sancho, who got the winner in the big derby at Schalke at the weekend. Look, people didn't expect Bayern, Dortmund to be challenging for the title this season, but they are, and they'll likely head into the winter break in 10 days' time, top of the Bundesliga.
The Jadon Sancho story is great. I think in Ireland we've maybe a fascination with our players playing in England, but it's probably more understandable that English players don't tend to play very often outside of England. But Jadon Sancho, obviously, was quite young. He made a brave decision to play for Dortmund. But at his age, he's one of these kids that was born in this actual century. What is the impact he's making, and what are his attributes for those of us who haven't really seen much of him?
He's incredibly confident. And, you know, on a technical level, he's a winger, operates generally on the left-hand side, can also play out on the right. Some of the best skills you'll see, incredibly quick feet, very good awareness inside the area, can find a teammate very well and score goals too, as he has been doing, you know, with relative ease. But it is his confidence. I remember covering Manchester City's youth team 2 or 3 years ago, and I was actually working for City at the time. And I said, OK, who's the exciting player in this team? And they were saying Brahim Diaz, who's now part of the first team, Phil Foden, part of the first team of City, and Jadon Sancho. And I was reading an interview with Sancho, I think in the programme, where he said, I just love taking on defenders. And he said in this interview, he was 15, 16 at the time, I know I'm going to beat them. I know I'm going to get round them. I work out how to do it, and I know I'm going to beat them. And he's taken that confidence away from Manchester City. He had the confidence to leave Pep Guardiola. Most players would kill to be coached by him. And for the opportunity to football at Dortmund. Now, what I'll add to this as well is that going to Germany doesn't guarantee game time. There's been a lot of coverage of Reece Nelson, the Arsenal loanee on at Hoffenheim, scoring lots of goals. But there were just as many failures for successes. Ryan Kent went on loan to Freiburg last season, didn't get a kick and got sent back. Reece Oxford, who I interviewed at Gladbach last season after a rare game, didn't really get a game and got sent back to West Ham at the end of the season. So it isn't a guarantee for success. And I think it's a compliment for Jadon Sancho in a Dortmund side that possibly has the best attacking midfield options in the league, maybe challenging that with Bayern. He's a nailed on starter for their biggest games. And his goal against Schalke was a perfect example of it. He made it all himself. It was a 1-2 from a nowhere situation that he orchestrated and finished. It was brilliant.
Is it expected he might return to his homeland in time, or, you know, is it, I suppose, an expectation over there that he's happy where he is for the time being, especially with him on the cusp for potentially winning the league?
Well, the English media are desperately trying to engineer the story that he's going to come back. I don't think he will. I think he's enjoying his football at the moment. Now, look, Dortmund, I've been to Dortmund a few times ago next week to watch the Gladbach game. It's not the most glamorous. It's a very industrial kind of town. And I wonder if maybe Sancho, you know, in terms of lifestyle, we've got to think about this with players. Sometimes they just don't want to live in a certain place anymore. But I think Sancho realises that there's real value to him playing there. I think he'd at least take it to the European Championships in 2020. How much would he have to spend to sign him anyway? I mean, he's a really difficult player to value because he's 18 years old. He's scoring goals and making goals in the Champions League. He's English, which is going to have extra value after Brexit, we think, if that goes through with permits and everything to get players into the country. I actually can't work out how much he's worth. Is he worth 30 million? Is he worth 100? I don't know. I hope he stays at Dortmund. And the reason I like that he's at Dortmund is, you know, he comes back into the English football hype machine when he's called up by Gareth Southgate. Everyone's interviewing him. Who is he? Blah, 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 all the rest of it. And then he can just leave. He could just go away, unlike Theo Walcott did when he was at Arsenal and getting, you know, harassed all the time. Who's his girlfriend? Blah, blah, blah. If you remember all that Walcott stuff at the time, Sancho just leaves. And in Germany, there's pressure on him at Dortmund, of course. But he can just get on with his football and he's improving very quickly.
It's such a good point you make, because he's probably able to lead a semi-normal life. And, you know, there's really, obviously, there's speculation in the English press about him, but he's obviously not party to that kind of intense, I suppose, clamour for information and hysteria that relates to Sterling. And I guess for a young kid, that's just such a great thing for his head.
Yeah, I think so. I really believe it. I mean, you know, Sterling's a great example. Broke into the Liverpool team at 17, was instantly an important player for Liverpool, and has had, you know, the media scrutiny, all these headlines over the past few years, very harsh criticism. I mean, the harshest. I think back to Theo Walcott. I think back to Michael Owen. Do you remember Michael Owen when he broke through, the scrutiny he was under, that his family were under? Theo Walcott is, for me, a good example as well, because I remember he was 16, 17. His 16-year-old girlfriend was in all the papers. They were papping them. Who is this Theo Walcott kid? Because he was a relative unknown, despite the fact Arsenal had signed him. I think Jadon Sancho's just going to go over there, play his football. Look, no doubt people are wanting to sign shirts, you know, take photos, selfies, all the rest of it in Dortmund, in Germany. But I think in that environment, it's a healthy one for him. And in Dortmund, there aren't too many distractions. I think he's going to knuckle down, play his football at a very high level, and he'll want to go deep in the Champions League this year with Dortmund.
Yeah, you mentioned that about the not too many distractions and also the general region. I think Dortmund has a population in the greater area of, in the region of 600,000. Yet at their home games, if this is correct, what I was reading earlier, their average attendance last year was upwards on 80,000.
Yeah.
And I just kind of, for the purpose of... I suppose some investigative work looked at their ticket prices for their game. I think they're playing Werder Bremen at the weekend, and you could get a ticket for like €17. So what is it about this club that makes it so attractive? I think it's kind of more or less fan-owned, but to be getting attendances like that when not really even challenging last season seems utterly phenomenal. And obviously, we all know about the atmosphere there as well.
I think it's a classic example of a working-class town, city. That
like football used to be, in a way.
Absolutely. And you look at the most fanatical, you know, I'd argue the most fanatical support in football, and it generally is lower income, working class kind of places. And Dortmund has been one of them. Now, and you look at the derby at the weekend, and it's why the derby with Schalke, you know, Gelsenkirchen, where Schalke are based, is, you know, a few kilometres down the road. And there's such a rivalry there because they're two teams from the Ruhr region with a similar background, that, you know, very industrial part of Germany. And I think it leads to this, everything is about the football match. You go to work in the week, but you're just thinking Saturday, 3:30 Saturday, get my beer and sausage, 3:30 on Saturday. And anyone who's ever been to Dortmund, I've been a few times now, I can't wait for the game next Friday against Gladbach, because they're the top two teams in Germany right now, Bayern on one of those. The atmosphere is absolutely incredible. And in that standing cop, they get 28,000 people.
Wow.
In one cop. Yeah. So it's completely insane. So you begin to understand why Jürgen Klopp was so adored there. Because for a place where football's everything, he delivered them Bundesliga titles and a Champions League final. And there's real potential in this current group. I don't think they'll go beyond the quarters of the Champions League.
I was going to say that. Why are they such limit? Are there such limitations there that they're not going to maybe be an outside bet to actually go all the way or at least get to the final?
They could have a 2013 run. They're not as good as that 2013 team that played at Wembley against Bayern, which had a relatively peak Lewandowski. We'll remember Marco Reus fully fit, Ilkay Gundogan, Mats Hummels. You know, but they are a very good team, and they could have a Monaco style season. You remember Monaco a couple of years ago under Leonardo Jardim with Mbappe and mm-hmm. or the rest of it reaching the semis. They could do that. I don't doubt that. But I think more realistic would be the quarterfinals, and then they just stay and challenge for the Bundesliga to the end. Because, look, Bayern will improve. They've got to. I mean, because they're very, by their high standards, they're really poor at the moment. I saw the Ajax game last night. I thought they were very disappointing defensively, suspect. I think they'll do some business in January. But Dortmund have a good squad. And Julian Weigl, for example, a player I tipped Pep Guardiola to sign at Man City because he doesn't give the ball away. He's a bit like Xabi Alonso, if you haven't seen him play yet. He's not getting in the team right now. Dortmund are like, we're playing better without him, so he's on the bench. And I think it's a confidence in the group of players they have that they'll go on to success. And, it'd be great to see someone else win the Bundesliga this season.
Yeah, Lucien Favre's been, I think he was linked with a move to Everton in the past. Is he sort of the type of coach now that will become very much a sort of a hot prospect with a view to English clubs who will be replacing their managers in the next year or so?
I think, Favre's been around the block a fair while now, and I think the issue is, I don't see him leaving Dortmund anytime soon unless they had some collapse, because Dortmund wanted him last summer. It wasn't a secret, it was fairly open that they tried to persuade Lucien Favre to take over from Thomas Tuchel, but he'd only been in Nice for a year. If you've ever been to Nice, you don't want to just stay for 1 year. You want to stay for two, maybe, because it's not a bad place to live. Mm. But they, after the catastrophic previous season where they had Peter Bosz, who got Ajax to the Europa League final but lost to Man United, he didn't work out. He couldn't work out how to get them to defend. Peter Stöger is just a very solid manager who saw them through to the end of the season. Favre's a perfect fit. And I'd point to one other player in the squad, in Marco Reus, because Marco Reus is fit. He scored 9 or 10 league
goals.
Being
fit is a big thing with him.
Massive. And Reus made his name under Lucien Favre at Borussia Mönchengladbach when the two worked together there. So they're reunited at Dortmund. Reus is his captain. I just think it's a perfect storm at the moment for Dortmund to go on and win some stuff this year.
Just finally, as well, Christian Pulis has been sort of linked with a move to a couple of English clubs actually over the last few days, more or less out of favour. What would an English club be getting if he were to join?
Getting one of the most exciting teenagers in world football. You'd be getting a winger of real pace, low centre of gravity, doesn't get knocked over, scores, makes goals. Maybe he's been eclipsed by Jadon Sancho a little bit this season because Sancho has been so outstanding. The other thing you get with Christian Pulisic, in quite a cynical point of view, is you're getting an American. So there is a massive value in a commercial sense to having the best American player on the planet.
I don't think that's been cynical at all. I think it's just pragmatic. Fortunately,
he's already the best team in the best player in the US national team. He's very level-headed. He's great in interview. He never gets too excited. Plays. He seems pretty by the book, and he's just a tremendous talent. And it looks like he is going to leave. He's spoken as well, Johnny, about his desire to play in the Premier League, about his love of Premier League football. He's linked with Chelsea, most notably linked with Liverpool. And you might have to Google this after. I think his contract expires the end of this season, maybe the end of next season.
Yeah, because I think they're going to try to cash in on him potentially because he's not obviously getting his game, and they might get upwards on 40 million, I think, for him.
Yeah, I think you get more. I think you would. And, I'm not one of these big believers in, David Beckham went to Real Madrid and they sold $4 billion worth of shirts. I don't think that stuff is real when they give those figures. But Christian Pulisic on the back of your shirt would, you'd flog a few in the United States for sure.
So yes or no, will Dortmund win the league?
Yeah, why not? That's
kind of a yes.
Yeah, that'll do, isn't it? Yeah, I think that, look, right now they're better than Bayern. They are 100% right now better than Bayern. I will say one thing, and I think it all hinges on the fitness of Marco Reus. He's so important, but he gets injured every season. And if he can stay injury-free for a whole season, they'll win it. But that's unlikely that he stays fit for 9 months.
Thanks for your time, Rob.
Pleasure.
What drama we're having in the Europa League, really. Celtic are 2-0 down at home to Salzburg. And the second goal, unfortunately, evoked memories of Karius's howler in the Champions League final last year. So all was lost and Celtic fans basically started leaving the ground. And then all of a sudden, Leipzig and Rosenberg, Leipzig are 1-0 up against Rosenberg. Looks like everything is kosher for them. And then with 4 minutes left, Rosenborg have made a 1-1. So as it stands, Celtic are going to go through. But you'd imagine with a couple of minutes left, Leipzig might press. And some of those fans who had left Celtic Park then came back to celebrate, which just shows you should never leave a ground early. We'll be back after the ads.
Are we there yet? Are we there?
Have patience, go.
I'm so excited, Camel. Do our new families know that we're coming for Christmas?
Yes, they've been preparing to meet us for months.
Really, cow?
Yes, Boher has told them how we will produce milk and cheese, help on the farm, and pass on our young to help other needy families.
One question. Are we there yet? Are we there?
Tommy Fleming here, and I'm here to ask you to turn the ordinary into the extraordinary this Christmas with Boher. Please phone 1850 829999 or visit boher.ie.
Give the gift of luxury this Christmas with a voucher for the Brehon Killarney. Overlooking the national park and home to the renowned Ang Sana Spa, the Brehon is an award-winning hotel located in one of the most beautiful places on earth. Exceptional service in exceptional surroundings. Purchase your Christmas gift voucher today at thebrehon.com.
You can get all your Christmas shopping done in one place at Swords Pavilions. From treats and presents to food and gift cards, we've got it all. There's 2 hours free parking and it's so convenient, right off the M1. So grab your little helpers and head on over. Jingle all the way. Christmas at Swords Pavilions. Festive fashion and fun for the whole family.
Ever punch the air and kiss the person next to you?
Merry Christmas, everybody.
During It's a Wonderful Life? Ever jumped up and down and roared at the top of your lungs?
Jingle time, jingle.
Singing Christmas carols? Ever been so tense you could hear a pin drop?
Ugh.
Playing Monopoly? Didn't think so. Be part of the 50,000 who join the roar for Leinster versus Bath, Saturday, December 15th at the Aviva Stadium. Kick-off 5:30 p.m. Terms and conditions apply.
We all need to mind our mental health. Yourmentalhealth.ie is a space to find information on mental health, how to care for it, and where to find supports and services for you or for people you know. And because it's online, you can visit anytime. Yourmentalhealth.ie. Information, support, services. From the HSE.
Get Christmas wrapped up this year with Harvey Norman, with gifts that they'll really love, like the special gift edition Dyson Supersonic, with fast drying and protection against extreme heat damage for just €399. Or get the new Sage Bambino coffee machine that delivers barista quality coffee for just €349, saving you €150. So for more gift ideas, visit us online or in store. Christmas wrapped up. Love, Harvey Norman.
I saw Santa on Christmas Day and he has a big beard.
A big white one.
Yeah. And he's wearing red stuff.
And he had a Christmas hat on as well.
He came down the chimney.
He left a big bag of presents, like a huge one.
He doesn't go on holiday.
No.
No.
Never seen Santa? Should have gone to Specsavers.
How does he fit down the chimney?
Off the ball. This is News Talk.
Welcome back to the end of the football show. And it looks as though Celtic are going through. I was hoping to bring you a definitive answer to this, but the Leipzig-Rosenborg game, which is 1-1, is in, I think, the fifth or sixth minute of injury time. Now, if Leipzig hold on, if that stays at 1-1, Celtic, despite a pretty desperate performance and inevitable defeat at home to Salzburg, which that game isn't over yet, but Celtic should be okay to go through. And they have actually gotten a goal back, so there's still a glimmer of hope that they could nick a 2-2 draw. But at the moment, Celtic should be through to the next stage of the Europa League. Indeed, they are. Full-time, Leipzig 1, Rosenborg 1. So Celtic, it's obviously been a very tricky week for the club with the Griffiths news as well, but they'll at least live to fight another day in the Europa League. Arsenal won 1-0 against Quarabeg in a dead rubber of a game. And it's also emerged that Chelsea fans sang anti-Semitic chants in the Europa League game today, and Chelsea have already actually issued a statement on this, and this obviously comes a few days after they suspended some fans for alleged racial abuse of Raheem Sterling. So pretty disappointing stuff for Chelsea to have to confront, but that was basically the wrap from the Europa League tonight. So Celtic go through. And that was actually it for us tonight. Tomorrow morning, Off the Ball AM is live for you early risers at 7:45 on Facebook, YouTube and Periscope. Adrian and Owen are in studio tomorrow, and they'll be joined by Alan Quinlan and Goffalo golfer, Stephanie Meadow. And we're back on here tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Where we'll be previewing Liverpool versus Manchester United. I'll be back in studio tomorrow for Friday Night Lights alongside Ger and the jockey trainer Dennis Hogan. And Richie is in next for Tom Dunn. Good luck.